Thanks for joining us. I'm Diane Rehm. Credit card balances decreased by almost $10 billion in August. Consumers are cutting back and choosing debit instead of credit when paying with plastic. But debit cards can carry fees and charges that add up quickly. Joining me in the studio to talk about proposed new consumer protections and what credit and debit card users should watch out for, Diane Casey Landry, Chief Operating Officer with the American Bankers Association, Kathleen Day, with the Center for Responsible Lending, and Washington Post reporter Nancy Trejos. We do invite your calls, questions, comments, 800-433-8850. Send your email to drshow@wamu.org. Good morning to all of you.
Good morning.
Kathleen Day, there's been a lot said and written in the last few months about overdrafts and the amounts that banks are charging for overdrafts on debit cards. How much did banks collect in overdraft fees in 2008?
It was $24 billion, and that's up 35% from just 2 years earlier when last we looked at that.
How come?
Well, we think it's because banks increasingly use tricks and traps to get people to, they have software that maximizes the number of overdrafts that someone will incur. For example, if you have three and one could go in, two could go in before it triggered an overdraft, the bank will put the third one in, make it trigger an overdraft, and then put the other two in, so you're charged for three overdraft fees. There's tricks and traps like that.
And how frequently is this done to individual consumers, or do most pay what they owe and not get into these overdrafts?
Well, we know that roughly 50 million people overdrew their accounts last year.
50 million?
50 million, that's a large chunk of the population. Now, not all of those had necessarily an overdraft fee, but probably many, probably most of them did, and possibly all.
Diane Casey Landry, what is it that banks are doing differently from what they used to do that are creating these overdrafts?
Well, Diane, thank you for having me here. And first I'd like to point out is that the bank doesn't create the overdraft. The consumer, by the purchase that they've made, has in fact created the overdraft if they don't have the funds in their account. And we always encourage consumers now to know what monies they have in their account. And to, you know, what Kathleen just said, you know, our surveys in the Federal Reserve and the FDIC have shown that almost 82% of people have never had an overdraft, did not have one last year, and that the vast majority, based on our survey as well as the FDIC survey, said that most people were very happy when their bank, in fact, covered it. I mean, they had 1 to 4 overdrafts. It was an unintended overdraft that you overdraw your account and the bank does pay it, and there is a fee involved, but it's a fee to protect you from having that that embarrassment.
So if 82% of mm-hmm. people are paying mm-hmm. and drawing money and have enough money to cover it in their accounts, you're talking about 18% who are causing the kind of increase in overdraft penalties that Kathleen just talked about.
Well, depending on whose statistics you use, the numbers that you came up with were actually a little bit lower than some other statistics. You know, I think what we have found that it breaks down by income pretty well equally, you know, you in terms of who incurs the overdrafts. And it's a service that some banks today don't offer overdrafts with on debit cards. Citibank, for one, has never offered overdrafts on debit cards.
No, they stopped it a year ago.
No, they've never offered it. They've never offered it. You know, it's different. Some community banks have never offered overdrafts on debit cards. You have to be very clear about what products you have. And with 8,200 banks and thrifts out there, consumers always, and they should walk with their feet. I mean, if they don't like the practices their bank has, they have choices.
How much is typically charged by a bank for an overdraft?
$29 to $39 is typical.
It's about $35 on average.
$35 on average. Nancy Trejosi, isn't Congress considering doing something about this?
Right. Two members of Congress have proposed bills that would limit overdraft fees or restrict them. Senator Dodd and Congresswoman Maloney are both tackling this. And what they would like to do is require banks to get customers' permission before they give them this overdraft protection. Right now, most of the banks, the FDIC found that most of the banks will automatically enroll customers into these programs.
Without their signature or permission?
Right.
But, you know, our survey found 96% of the people who incurred an overdraft, and we did this as independent survey results, people were happy that the bank covered it because they didn't face the embarrassment and they didn't face the fee from the merchant or from their landlord or their mortgage holder. Because if you don't have that amount covered, you're going to be charged a fee.
See, our surveys, we would love to have the questions you ask. I noticed that you haven't made those public, the questions from the survey. I would love to see those because our survey shows that the majority of people they want to be affirmatively asked before they're enrolled in these the highest cost overdraft program. And secondly, they don't want to be charged at the point of sale. They'd like to be offered the opportunity to say no. I'd like to see how you ask the question.
Our questions are, we would certainly make those available to
Great.
You. I mean,
Nancy, as you hear this kind of exchange, what's going on here? Is this a case of truth in advertising, truth in lending? What is it?
Well, I think there's obviously a lot of surveys out there. I don't know the methodology that was used in, well, I looked at your survey, but, I think this is, you know, Congress a few months ago passed this credit card legislation. There's obviously a lot of interest on Capitol Hill to protect consumers. It seems like the balance of power has shifted from the banks to consumers. Overdraft fees are the next big fight on Capitol Hill.
And the Federal Reserve Board, which regulates banks, has recognized for some time that there is a problem in this area, and it is proposing some new rules. So it is generally recognized that there is a problem.
So what would these new rules do, Nancy?
For overdraft fees?
Yes.
Like I said, the Federal Reserve is probably going to come up with some new rules at the end of the year. But certain members of Congress would like to have stronger regulation of these fees. For one thing, they would require the banks to get customers' permission.
To disclose.
Right, to let them know, if you overspend your account, you can choose to have the bank cover it, or you can choose to have the transaction rejected and not have to pay that fee. So they really want consumers to have the choice. The other thing that the bills would do is regulate the order in which these transactions are charged. And right now, as Kathleen said, a lot of the banks will charge the higher or put through the higher transaction, therefore exhausting your funds more quickly.
Diane, what about that?
Well, we are expecting the Federal Reserve to have new regulations out by the end of the year. Many banks have already begun to implement opt-in accounts.
Help me to understand the rationale of moving the third transaction in there as quickly as they are describing?
Some of it is done in an attempt to recognize that people wanted their mortgage paid. More often than not, the mortgage was the most important transaction somebody wanted to have paid. And there, if you are late on your mortgage, it's usually a percentage of the payment that you would then pay in terms of the fee for a late mortgage payment. If you don't have your key transactions paid, then you're going to still face a fee, if not from the bank, but then from the merchant or from the landlord or from the mortgage holder, the retailer. So from our perspective, the idea was to cover what has been historically the most important transaction, which was the mortgage.
People were paying their mortgage on their debit card, with their debit card?
We were talking overdrafts, Kathleen. We weren't talking debit.
About debit charges, and the mortgages are typically not paid.
Actually, that's a fallacy. On debit cards, if you think about using your debit card and you go into a Starbucks or you go into a small retailer, most of those retailers don't even get authorization. They take the card and they get the transaction and they batch it all up at the end of the day and they send it through. They don't get an authorization online. For small retailers, they don't have the technological capabilities to even make a determination today. And the facts bear it out that the point of sale terminals don't exist. Now, if you're in a larger retailer, it will come back and give you a code and they write it down and they say transaction and here's the code. But if you don't get that on debit card, you don't.
Diane Casey Landry, she's Chief Operating Officer for the American Bankers Association. Small break here and then right back. Got lots of callers waiting, many emails, as we talk about what banks are doing, what overdraft means if you use your debit card, the kinds of fees that are being charged. Here's an email from Allison. She's in Toledo, Ohio. I'm glad to see attention drawn to this. I use my debit card as much as possible to avoid fees, but my bank recently began an advertising campaign that said, use any ATM, no fees, and make any ATM a National City ATM, that stated if you use another ATM, they would refund the charge for using a non-national city ATM. However, it turns out this great feature only applies to a select few type of accounts. Banks have been able to rack up lots of small fees by leading people to believe they can use ATMs for free. Kathleen?
Well, the truth is that over the last decade, banks increasingly are make their money off of fees and not off of loans as they traditionally have. So what we have seen and what the Fed has seen, both in credit cards and debit cards, and in mortgage lending, that fee income that the banks increasingly are designing these products in a way to maximize, so the customer has to come back again and again and incurs fee after fee. And don't forget, a lot of debit card fees, think about it. It affects a lot of people on fixed income, like students and the elderly. To suddenly go and have to buy a prescription drug or something else and have this huge fee when there are cheaper alternatives. To be automatically enrolled in the most expensive program is just wrong.
Nancy.
Well, what we found is that a lot of people right now are turning away from their credit cards. The consumer mentality is we're seeing a fundamental shift here.
Yeah.
People want to save more. We're seeing the savings rate increase. It's about 4% now. It used to be near zero. People are not spending as much money. They're afraid of losing their jobs, or they have lost their jobs. So they're increasingly trying to get away from these credit cards that oftentimes come with high interest rates.
Right.
We've seen in the last few months a lot of the credit card companies have increased interest rates. And so people are using their debit cards more, and they think that it's a more responsible way of dealing with their finances. And then sometimes they get hit with these fees. So it's created quite a problem.
But the question becomes, how often do they get hit with these fees? Do they know in advance they're going to be hit with the fees, and at what point does a fee kick in? Does it kick in for $1? Does it kick in for $200?
$1, and it's up to 10 times a day sometimes people are being charged these fees. And imagine a low-income person suddenly racking up $390.
But I think the unfortunate thing, though, is that consumers do have choices, and that we're going to the worst case scenario, which is not representative of the overall practices. I would agree with Nancy. We have seen a shift to debit away from credit. We are delighted to see a shift towards savings. We think that's very important. One of the things that consumers need to recognize today is that you have full service checking accounts, which offer debit card features free. Most of the full service, 24-hour access to it by internet. You can check your balances on versus on your cell phone. You can check your balances anyway. You can sign up for services where they email you your accounts. And for the vast majority of people, that works. What we need to do is to find a system that people have an account that works for them. Let's say that you have a tendency to run a low balance in your checking account and you like to use your debit card. You can go to your bank and you should have the choice to opt in and link your savings account. So if you keep excess money there, so the money can be transferred so you don't have the overdraft. The banks have the capability, if you want it, to link it. And consumers should know that, because that's an important feature. If you don't like to keep a lot of money in your checking account because you don't get any interest on it, then you should have the opportunity to put it in your savings account and link it before an overdraft occurs.
But if you have a debit card, because you're tired of credit card fees, you've opted for a debit card, are you told right up front that if you draw more money through your debit card from your checking account than is in there, that a $1 overdraft is going to cost you a fee?
It's disclosed to you, but the
how?
It's in one of those lengthy documents that you receive up front.
So I think
the question now, and what the Fed's proposing and which we have supported, is that there will be an opt-in. You'll be told, Kathleen, Nancy, do you want this feature? And if you say
by
no.
By whom?
With the account representative, when you open up the account.
Okay.
So do you want this feature? If you say no, then you don't have that service. So you overdraw by $1.
Mm-hmm.
The transaction is declined, meaning it cannot be processed. And then you will be subject to whatever fee or whomever you are doing to pay that item with. I mean, you are using that in lieu of cash. So if you don't have the money in your account and that transaction's declined,
Well, as recently as 2004, most banks were actually, they did decline at point of sale. It's amazing that the banks for in the last year or two have been saying, oh, we can't do this at point of sale. We can't do this at point of sale. And suddenly, when it looks like Congress and the public is becoming fed up with this, suddenly three big banks announced and then some smaller banks joined in and said, okay, we're not going to do it for when they go $5 to $10 over. And we're going to, the fact is, people should be asked at the point of sale whether they want to continue.
But it does require at the point of sale that the merchant have the appropriate equipment, and they don't just authenticate the card to make sure it's a valid card, but they actually process the transaction. And that will require a change on the part of the merchants, not the banks. The merchants have to push that through.
Nancy.
Well, you know, there are arguments on both sides here. Obviously, people are responsible for their own personal finances. There are many ways for you to keep track of what's in your bank account. And this is what the banking industry has been arguing. You know, people need to be responsible here. But at the same time, you know, again, the argument on the consumer side is, you know, why is it that banks allow people to overspend their accounts, you know, to overdraw their accounts? They're giving them, a lot of people, this service that they don't necessarily want. They're not giving them the choice.
And increasingly, they are delaying. There's a lot of other tricks. They delay recognizing deposits fully. I know years ago when I've gotten direct deposit of my paycheck for years and years, it used to be it would be credited immediately at midnight. I notice now there's a couple days where it's pending, and they're increasingly delaying these things when they could do it immediately.
I actually would have to take issue with that, because the regulations have been in place for a long time under the Expedited Funds Availability Act, which you are well aware of, Kathleen, and there are very strict rules. And there's also safety and soundness concerns. We've also had an uptick for cashier's checks, for fraudulent cashier's checks. We just sent another notice out to our members last week. There's a scam being placed on the elderly. They're getting checks.
These are not banks, these are not cashier checks.
But electronic transactions, there are no holds. I would debate you on
I'll invite you
I would invite you to have a new bank account relationship.
All right. Let's open the phones and hear what we've got. 800-433-8850 to West Chesterfield, New Hampshire. Jonathan, you're on the air.
Hi there. I'm a dinosaur calling your show because I do everything possible in cash.
Good for you.
And I resent a little bit the fact that merchants have to pay for the machines and pay the fees for all these card transactions. So, in effect, I'm subsidizing everybody who wants to pay with plastic. And that kind of annoys me. When the price of gas doubled, most people buy gas with credit cards, so the banks take double on that through nothing they did.
Well, how much does a bank charge for each credit transaction? How much does the credit card charge for each credit transaction?
Well, we've moved into another topic right now,
right,
and that's called interchange.
Yeah.
And on the interchange, there is a fee that's split among a wide variety of players to ensure the functioning of the payment system. That fee is used, in fact, to sustain the ability for people to pay by credit, and so it ranges between 3% and 5% of a transaction.
I think there's actually a hearing going on.
There
on
is.
Capitol Hill right
and
now
we're,
on
and
this
we're,
topic.
And we're testifying at it.
Because, again, there's another bill that's being considered. The merchants don't like these interchange fees, obviously. And so they say that they don't have the ability to negotiate these fees with Visa, with MasterCard, and they would like to have that ability.
I see. All right, Jonathan, you can continue as a dinosaur as long as you like, but credit is still very much a part of our system. Let's go to Cincinnati, Ohio. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Diane. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Surely.
I am This is a wonderful topic. I was so glad to hear it. I was banking with Fifth Third here in Cincinnati, and I'm disabled, and I have direct deposit. And this was a couple of years ago. I ended up changing banks after 20 years. I was with Fifth Third from before they were with Fifth Third. And I applied for overdraft protection, and I was denied because my credit wasn't good enough. And they told me I could open a savings account, but I didn't have the funds. I was living off $520 a month, and that's pretty hard to open a savings account when that's your only income. And what happened one day was I went to the ATM, and I took $20 out, and I noticed I was 80 cents overdrawn. So I immediately drove around the building and put the $20 back in. Well, they don't credit that $20 until the end of the business day, and I had three checks go through that day, and I ended up with over $100 in overdraft fees. And I went into the bank and tried to get them to undo it. It was literally 3 minutes I had the money out and put it back in. And they wouldn't reverse the fees. And they told me that because I'm such a good customer that I had this overdraft protection that they denied me for. I had no idea. And I said, well, can I just not get any money out if I don't have it? Can you just not give it to me? And they said, no, you know, that's just our policy.
Kathleen.
Well, this is just an example of why we need this Consumer Financial Protection Agency that the president has proposed and Congress is now considering, because the regulators have really fallen asleep at the switch. And there's an inherent conflict of interest in the way the federal regulators, their relationship with the banks that they oversee. They get their funding from those banks. So they if they're not lenient enough, the lending institution can switch its charter. Under this new proposal, everyone would have to belong. There wouldn't be regulatory shopping akin to a teenager figuring out which parent is going to let them do the most things. And you would have a level playing field, and we would no longer forget that strong consumer protections are essential for a good economy.
At 26 before the hour, you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. And let's go now to Paul in Dallas, Texas. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Diane. Thanks so much for having me on.
Sure.
Today. I have some experience with banking and my work career, and what I'm aware of is that when there's an exception, such as a bounce check, or you have to do something exceptional that the system doesn't normally handle, lots of people have to get involved. It's very manually intensive, and the banks incur a lot of expenses. How are the banks going to cover those expenses if not through fees for these kind of things? Can your guests explain that to me?
Can I jump
sure.
in on this from
Go
the
ahead,
banking industry?
Diane.
Well, Paul hit on a very key point that when someone does something out of the ordinary or does something that requires manual attention in an automated environment, it does increase the cost of handling it, and it is done through a fee structure. And I would take a little bit issue with what Kathleen said. I don't think that any of this suggests that we need a new agency that's going to add to a bureaucracy. We would disagree on that point. But I do think enhanced consumer protection is certainly essential. And to your last caller, I think it's really important that one of the things you can do at an ATM as a consumer is if you think you're running very close on your balance and you don't want to overdraw it, you have the opportunity to check your balance prior to doing the transaction to take the money out. You can check your balance, and if you can see you only have $18.80 or $19.80, then maybe you don't want to take out $20 because that would overdraw
but
your account.
Why charge $100?
Well, I think he said he had multiple checks, so there was other. So obviously he was in a situation, I'm assuming based on the scenario, that he was going to overdraw that account regardless because he said he had other checks that were processed that day. So I do think, though, but he had the choice then to continue with the transaction at the ATM.
But most of these charges do not involve anything that involves a manual or exceptional transaction. It really doesn't. And I have to address this idea that this agency would cause red tape. In fact, it would consolidate existing authority that is scattered among four existing bank regulatory agencies and has not been adequately exercised. It would consolidate it, put it in one place, and never again would regulate regulators lose sight. Regulators now, of course, say they understand that strong consumer protections are important, or else we land in a recession like this, which was, by the way, the same issuers of the credit cards, the same people charging these overdraft fees, same folks that did 50% of the subprime lending.
Nancy.
Well, I think part of the argument here that you hear from a lot of the legislators and the consumer agencies is that in regards to the overdraft fees, sometimes it's just excessive. There are times and oftentimes when you're overdrawn by, you know, just $12 or even less than that, and suddenly you're hit with this $35 fee. And a lot of the banks were allowing this to happen several times a day. Now, as we just talked about, a lot of the banks have voluntarily changed their overdraft programs. For example, Bank of America used to let you overdraw your account up to 10 times a day, and they recently announced that they're going to decrease that to 4 times.
But only because they're trying to stop this legislation from going through. It takes a spotlight put on these practices to get them to do the right thing.
The agency is looking to be created also because of what happened in the mortgage situation, and that doesn't address the non-banks, the shadow banks, and you do have bank examiners that are in place in the institutions today.
Diane Casey Landry, she's chief operating officer for the American Bankers Association. We'll be right back.
National broadcast of The Diane Rehm Show is made possible in part by the Pew Charitable Trusts, whose Subsidy Scope project provides information about federal subsidies across industries at pewtrusts.org. By the Wallace Foundation, a source of ideas for expanding learning opportunities beyond the school day, at wallacefoundation.org. And by the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, helping NPR advance journalistic excellence in the digital age. This is NPR.
On the next Fresh Air, how Gorbachev really reacted to Reagan's plea, tear down this wall, and other new stories about the end of the Cold War. Some of them are terrifying. We talk with journalist David Hoffman, author of The Dead Hand, the untold story of the Cold War arms race and its dangerous legacy. Join us for the next Fresh Air.
Welcome back. As we talk about credit cards, debit cards, fees for overdrafts, all kinds of banking issues. Here's an email from Susan in Guilford, Connecticut. Is it true that credit card companies will be able to charge customers a fee for not carrying a balance month to month? Or that there will now be finance charges from the date of the charge rather than a set date by which you must pay or be charged finance charges? Diane.
Okay, well, the Congress passed a massive credit card reform act earlier this year, and there are a lot of changes that are coming forward. There's an 800-page regulation that's out for comment right now to the industry for what the banks can do. As of August 20th of this year, If banks are going to increase your interest rate on a balance that you're carrying, they have to give you a notice, and you have to have the ability to opt out of that. And you could say, I don't want the increase, and then they will stop your line, and you will have to pay that off.
Okay,
there will
back
also
to
be,
this there question.
And with respect to the annual fees, as banks are trying to recalibrate the accounts, there will be probably more annual fees coming back in. If you don't carry a balance and you have a rewards program associated with that card, that's an expensive card for the bank. They have to issue, they have to manage, they send you the paper statements. So there's a cost to that account. So you will see some annual fees being back in there so they can manage the program.
What do you think about that, Kathleen?
Well, here's the thing. The reason that this law was passed is because the Fed issued credit card rules finally, recognizing abuses, and Congress deemed it to be too weak. One of the things that's going to be stopped by this card is a practice where when you made your minimum payment, it was applied to the least costly portion of your balance, so that your more expensive, say a cash withdrawal, which carries a higher interest rate, would not go down, even if it was.
But let me just understand the credit card statement. If you're using nothing but a credit card, you get a bill each month. You pay it off. You're now saying that there's going to be an additional fee that you're going to have to pay because you are.
But it's to make up for the end of these practices.
There will not be a fee for every card. You have 6,000 issuers out there today, 6,000 banks that issue. Some will make a determination that if they will go back to an annual fee mode. Others will make a determination that they won't. So that consumer needs to shop around and determine if, in fact, they want to pay off their account on a monthly basis, that they have a card that has no fee associated with it. Others will, in fact, turn around and say, I'm going to offer this, but I may have a $20, a $65 fee associated with it. But it won't be monthly. It'll be an annual card fee for issuing that card to you.
But that's in addition to what they'll get from the merchant. And the reason that that's happening is because this bill has stopped some of these other unfair practices that people just didn't understand.
Well, and there have been reports about consumers getting fees for not using their cards. Well, one of the things when this law passed in May, the banking industry was very clear about saying there might be some unintended consequences here. You know, they argued that they're not going to be able to sufficiently determine people's risk, and therefore they said that they would have to increase interest rates across the board. Didn't matter if you were a good consumer or bad, if you were paying your bills on time or not. And we have seen that happen in the last few months, and we have seen a return of annual fees and other types of fees.
Okay, we've gotten a few tweets. Here's one. Moving banks is an horrific, painful, time-consuming effort. Do you agree with that?
I have heard bankers say, I'll never forget what one banker once told me, that you can hit consumers over the head with a 2x4 before they will switch, because it is so onerous and involves such a laborious process.
But you know, you have banks who will make it easy for you, and I can point to a bank that's right here in this area, in the Washington, D.C. area, that they will give you a packet and they will walk you through it, and they say, we want your business and we will help you unravel your other existing banking relationships so you can come to us. There's a lot of competition out there.
All right, let's go to Carly. She's in Birmingham, Alabama. Good morning. You're on the air.
I'm actually...
you're a he.
Okay. Yeah.
Sorry about that.
No problem. My problem is this right here. It's actually my wife is on a fixed income. She got... What happened is actually they took money out of her account. Her bills, she pays every month, you know, and her bills, we keep everything separate so, you know, we know exactly where our money goes. Well, somehow or another, we know how it was, but $49 came up gone out of the account. Well, the phone bill, she pays the phone bill. It does not go through because it winds up actually being about 27 cents, I think, is what it was. It would have been an overdraft. They did not do that. They didn't pay it. They charged the $35. For the overdraft, and the phone company also charged that, which came off the next month's bill, which in turn shortened her for paying our bills. for the next month, and it actually took us about 6 months to get out of that. I'm working 20 hours a week, you know, because of this economic problems we're in, and you know, I mean, it was a real problem, and the banks did nothing. Wachovia Bank wanted to do nothing to help us, and the lady that keeps sitting up here with her survey, and she's, you know, let us see the questions. You know, you can ask people questions and lead them into the answers that you want.
All right, Carly. Sorry for the difficulty you've had over 27 cents.
Yeah, it's just not right. And it shouldn't be that people have to go in and do battle with their financial service provider.
And he got hit both by the bank and by the telephone company.
Because he didn't have an overdraft fee. He had an insufficient funds fee. And because it was rejected, it was manually pulled out, he didn't have the funds. So they had a return check, which if you don't overdraft and you return it, you will get a return check fee and you will get the merchant fee.
No, we have so many frustrated consumers right now. A lot of people are in just a terrible financial situation. They're losing their jobs. They're losing their homes. And they're upset because they see the government bail out these banks. And they think, well, you know, why is it that these banks that are getting this taxpayers' money, why are they not being more friendly to consumers? I mean, that's the sort of the consumer
argument. That's
what
it comes down to.
It absolutely does come down to that. Look, when you have federally insured deposits, you have to have regulators who are there sitting on behalf of taxpayers and consumers, making sure that these banks don't engage in practices that ultimately are unsafe and unsound for us all. I mean, it was irresponsible mortgage lending that sparked this crisis, the same banks. And now it's, you know, it's just revealed the overdraft, the credit cards, the list just goes on and on.
The administration, by their own statement, said that the vast majority of the loans that caused the problems were made outside the banking industry insured depositories. We agree that we do need to have new rules. We do agree we should have examiners in there. We don't think you should separate from bank side safety and soundness and consumer protection. But I would point out to you that the vast majority of the banks in this country did not take government money. We're lucky. We have 8,200 banks, and only 650 of them took the government TARP money. The rest of them did not take it or are not eligible to take it.
All right, to Silver Spring, Maryland. Good morning, Jenny.
Hi, Diane. Thank you for having me on. I'm very passionate about this issue. So I just want to say, first off, that I have a personal experience. The irony of my experience is that at the time I was teaching financial literacy classes. So it's not like I didn't know what was going on, but I was in a situation where I couldn't get out of it. I had a fairly low salary working for a nonprofit, and I started getting overdraft fees. My nonprofit did not do direct deposit, so then I would deposit my check. But because I had incurred overdraft fees, they would hold the check for up to 10 days, thus incurring more overdraft fees, thus holding my check the next time, thus incurring more overdraft fees. And for about a year's time, I paid at least $300 to $400 of my meager salary to the banks in these overdraft fees. I take issue with the thought that this is a choice for consumers. The 18% of people who pay these fees, if those numbers are even correct, are people who live paycheck to paycheck, who don't have money to have in a savings account, who are often young people who just got out of college and are not at their full capacity for salary, and don't have a choice because many banks won't take them once they've started incurring overdraft fees. The things that these banks are doing is not in the consumer's interest. It's not what consumers want. It's to make money. And it is critical that the federal government create this Consumer Financial Protection Agency to protect consumers and not the bank's interest.
Well, Jenny, I can certainly feel your passion and understand it. Diane.
Well, obviously, she's had a very bad situation.
Yeah,
that's completely
really
unfair. You know, one thing I do need to clarify, though, that of the people who had overdrafts of one to four overdrafts in a year's time, that there is no income breakdown. It really goes to about 10% go to high-income people who had that, about 13% of the median income, and then 16% at low income. So income surprisingly, to us was surprisingly, does not suggest whether or not you're going to overdraw your account. Sometimes it's small business. Now, this situation for this young woman obviously was a very difficult one, and she probably, if she was teaching financial literacy, maybe she should have had some conversations with the bank, because she was obviously in the wrong account that was exacerbating her situation.
Kathleen. This is why, again, I'll sound like I broke a record, but this is why we need a consumer protection agency. Look, the arguments that the industry is using against this agency are exactly the same arguments that the banking industry used to federal regulators for the last 15 years that prevented the Fed not to issue mortgage rules. And if they finally issued them last summer, that 14 years after Congress authorized them to do it, and during those 14 years, the bankers were saying the same thing: you're going to dry up credit, you're going to make it more expensive, all these things. And that's what caused this crisis. That's why you need an agency like this. They are using the exact same scare tactic arguments now.
Nancy.
Well, I can't have an opinion here, but this overdraft situation, obviously, a lot of people it impacts so many people because so many people use their debit cards now. Congress really wants to step in and make sure that consumers have a choice of whether or not they can overdraw their accounts and incur these fees.
How likely is it that this new agency or consolidated agency is going to come into being?
Well, I hope it's very likely. It's what the country needs. It's a way to protect consumers and ultimately taxpayers. You know, we haven't finished paying for the SNL bailout, which I know Diane is well aware of. You worked at the FDIC. We need to get some common sense supervision here.
At 7 minutes before the hour, you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. And now to Dallas, Texas. Sarah, you're on the air.
Hi, Diane. It's good to hear your voice so wonderful again.
Thank you.
I had a similar situation. I made a mistake in my bank account, in my check register, and all of a sudden I was hit with overdraft fees that caused more checks to bounce or be paid, and those incurred more overdraft fees until I was looking at $500 a month in overdraft fees for 6 months. And I had to stop the hemorrhaging. There was no other way to do it. I had to put my mortgage payment in arrears. And I called and begged the bank. They had the option of waiving half those fees, and they refused over and over and over again. I called in tears, and they refused.
That sounds like a very terrible situation, and what I'm a little confused about is that if you carry overdrafts and you don't clear that balance up within a six-month period of time, the banks are required, and they will close the account. So you can't continue to accrue because the bank has to notify you when the overdraft has occurred. Mm. So this sounds like a very unique circumstance.
These rules need clarification, clearly. I mean, I just... listening to all this as a person who uses nothing but a credit card, realize that there is so much confusion out there about how to use these things wisely, appropriately, and with the best of intention. And yet, give us that figure again, Kathleen, that you gave early in the program about the monies that banks are charging for overdrafts.
$24 billion last year, which is up 35% from 2 years
ago. How do you account
for
that?
More than what we spend on fresh vegetables country.
But the reality is that we are a $13.5 trillion industry, and so that it is a large number, I would agree with you. But at the same time, banks are in the business to make money. It's a fee for service, and that we need to have people better manage their accounts, and you have a choice. And one of the things I think we need to think about today is there are some 1,700 pages of regulation prior to the new 800-page credit card bill that the banks are working through, and your average bank has 35 employees. So I do think that you are burdening small businesses that serve our country and our economy. And it's not just banks today that are in there issuing credit cards. It's not just banks that offer services. You can get those from retailers and from other providers, like a foreign mortgage, and we need to make sure the regulation is equitable.
Look, we did a quick back of the envelope look. If you take the top four banks in the country and you look at the bonuses that they paid to their top executives, 80% of that was funded with overdraft fees and late fees on credit cards. There are, you know, I think there are ways that banks are saying that they have to have this kind of money to fund stuff that, you know, it's just executive bone. I think there are places you could look.
We need a strong, solid banking industry for this
Absolutely.
Country and for our economy. And one of the things I think that's been lost in this entire debate is that a strong banking sector will help our economy get back on track. And I'll go back to something Nancy said earlier. There's some personal financial responsibility that goes in there for everyone.
All right. We'll have to end it at that. And despite the kindness of one caller, I do think my voice needs a little more time to recover. So tomorrow, my good colleague Susan Page is going to be sitting in this chair. I'll hope to be back with you on Monday. Kathleen, Diane, Nancy, thank you all so
much. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening, all. I'm Diane Rehm.
The Diane Rehm Show is produced by Sandra Pinkard, Nancy Robertson, Jonathan Smith, Susan Neighbors, and Denise Couture. The engineer is Toby Schreiner. Dori Anisman answers the phones. Visit drshow.org for audio archives and CD sales, transcripts from SoftScribe, and podcasts. Call 202-885-1200 for more information. Our email address is drshow@wamu.org. This program comes to you from American University in Washington. This is NPR, National Public Radio.